It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas with you for another 45 minutes or so before we hand you off to Jim Merling and Company for the WEOL Scholastic Games of Lorain County, presented by the Elyria Public Library System. But we're going to talk about an entirely different book right now. We've got Adam Burke with Bang the Book Radio and bangthebook.com joining us on the hotline right now. Adam, always a pleasure, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andy. Great segue, by the way. That was fantastic.
Yeah. The two completely unrelated, but you know what? I've got to take advantage of those when I can get them. But well, this is a really cool time of the year. If you're a sports fan in any form or fashion, it's not very tough to find something that you like on television with Major League Baseball in full swing. On Saturday, the NBA playoffs begin, the NHL playoffs in full swing right now, and of course, you throw the Masters into that mix as well, and that just makes for some must-see TV. We'll begin with the Masters. Rory McIlroy shot one over on day one, and there really haven't been many that have shot over par on the opening day and come back to win this thing. How much do you think that affects his real-time odds to win the Masters?
Yeah, when you look at Rory McIlroy, I mean, he came into this tournament as the favorite at most places, in the 9-1 plus 950 range, 9.5-1 in that type of area. And you know, with being one over and being several shots off the pace, he winds up going from the favorite to being in the 25-1 range. And I know a lot of golf bettors will take some shots before the tournament on guys that are triple-digit prices, or, you know, 80-1, 60-1, something like that. And they'll hope for opportunities like this with the really good players, where you get Dustin Johnson, you know, maybe 15-1 as opposed to 10-1, Rory here at 25-1 as opposed to 9-1. You get those world-class players at a little bit better of a price after the first and second round, because what makes these guys so good is that they're so consistent. Anybody can go out there and shoot a 66 or a 67 in the Masters on day one. They'll go out there on Friday and shoot a 75, come back to the pack while those better players start to make their moves. So a lot of people do strategize that way when it comes to golf tournaments, and I'm sure some people hopped on Rory at 25-1.
Oh, it would be hard to believe that they didn't, because if ever there were a guy in this particular field anyway that could make up that amount of ground in 3 days, you'd like to think that it would be him. And a guy that's going to get a ton of action, based on name alone, if nothing else, would be Tiger Woods. Boy, at one point yesterday, I think he was going off at 6-1 when he had actually taken the lead. But, you know, those things are just so interesting to follow, if nothing else, but I think extraordinarily unpredictable at times. What kind of advice could you share with the listening audience when betting real time when it comes to the Masters? What's the best kind of advice that you can give to those who are tracking guys like Tiger Woods, who, again, at one point yesterday was going off at 6-1, but then we saw that change pretty quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you want to do is you want to look at what these guys are doing well. And I watched a lot of the Masters yesterday. I haven't had a chance to tune in yet here as we're recording this afternoon. But, you know, for Tiger, I mean, he was splitting fairways. He was doing a fantastic job off the tee. And, you know, when he was just coming back off the back injury, that was kind of the problem for him. He was sort of spraying the driver all over the course. Well, he was hitting a lot of fairways, a lot of greens in regulation yesterday. He just wasn't making any putts. So, you know, you sort of wonder here with Tiger, I mean, will he get that feel going on the greens? If he makes a couple early in his round, will that sort of take the pressure off a little bit? He was putting himself in a position to succeed, and that's really important. You know, if you're missing putts, he had a couple that lipped out too, so he wasn't misreading them badly. He just wasn't getting them to fall. That's a guy in pretty good form, a guy that I would certainly consider as the tournament is going on. On the flip side, if you've got a guy, you know, who maybe had a ball take three hops through a bunker and wind up 8 feet from the hole, or, you know, maybe hit a tree branch and it kicked back out into the fairway, and he winds up shooting 67 or 68, probably a guy you want to play against in matchups the next day, because that luck probably will even out at some point.
Adam Book with Bang the Book Radio and bangthebook.com joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Selfishly, I'm asking this question because I was in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, and I took a look at Dustin Johnson. He looked pretty good on day one, and obviously, you know, this playing at right after 5 o'clock on Friday, certainly a lot of things can change throughout the weekend, but what are your thoughts on a guy like him? And again, I'm asking that selfishly because that was a guy I liked a lot a couple weeks back.
Yeah, I mean, I like DJ. He obviously has a chance to win at any course that he plays because he's such a world-class type of player, and also, I mean, look, this is the Masters, so I'm not going to say that guys aren't focused for this thing. But given what's happened to Dustin Johnson here in the past, you know, he's had to withdraw a couple of times from this event. Obviously, fell down the stairs. What was it, 2 years ago, and had to come out with the back injury. Well, this is a guy that has that little bit of extra motivation to go out there and win this tournament. So, you know, he's somebody that's going to stay focused, probably going to stay a little bit more even keel than some of the other emotional guys out there. You know, John Rahm is a perfect example. John Rahm is a world-class type of player. He's a little bit of a powder keg. Sometimes he'll miss a putt, hit a bad shot, and all of a sudden, you know, he winds up bogeying the next two or three holes and falls off the pace a little bit because he just can't control his emotions as much. I think Dustin Johnson is the right type of guy for these major types of events. And, you know, I mean, obviously we see a guy like Brooks Koepka as well, who just seems to play well in every major. Some guys are just made for the big events. Other guys are made to play well in lesser events or events close to home or something like that. I think Dustin Johnson's a total package kind of guy.
All right, well, we're going to shift our attention from the tee box to the ice box. We'll start talking about some NHL hockey playoffs. Matt Douglas is very, very excited because his Blue Jackets took a 1-0 lead in that series over the Tampa Bay Lightning a couple of nights ago. Looking at these series, are there any particular first-round NHL matchups that you really like a lot from a handicapping perspective?
Well, I mean, you certainly have to enjoy what the Blue Jackets did because Tampa Bay was a $4 favorite. You had to lay 400 to win 100 before that series began. Blue Jackets come back, and now that price is minus 205 on Tampa Bay. So 205 to win 100. Great hedging opportunity for some of my friends out there that took Columbus on that big price coming into the series. But, you know, I thought that there were some pretty interesting game one developments. And you know, one of them was that even though Carolina lost to Washington, I thought they played a strong game last night. They were the better team for long stretches of that game. They just didn't get the goaltending and weren't able to score enough goals on their opportunities. But I thought they played pretty well. And if they take this series back to Raleigh tied at 1-1, I think they become a pretty dangerous team. The Islanders and the Penguins had a great game one, probably the best game one of any that we've seen here so far. Should be a very good game two coming up tonight. And that's one of those where, you know, the Islanders, with head coach Barry Trotz, who used to coach the Washington Capitals, took them to the Stanley Cup last year. He's faced Pittsburgh a ton, and he had a very good game plan early on that allowed the Islanders to dictate the pace, get the lead. I know they blew the lead in the end, had to win the game in overtime, but that was a really interesting game one to me to see how the Islanders were able to stack up against the Penguins and what sort of impact Trotz would have on that series. I think it was a pretty good opening showing for the Islanders. If they win tonight's game, they'll be in the driver's seat. But that was a really good game one and a really good indication of how that series may play out, where the Islanders are the more structured team, the Penguins are the more talented team, and I'll be curious to see if coaching and structure wins out.
A couple surprises, it seemed, there in that first round. Were there any that kind of stood out as teams that might be able to pull those upsets, with Dallas winning and Toronto kind of doing what they did to Boston last night?
The Dallas and Nashville series is really intriguing for a variety of different reasons because these two teams are pretty similar. Nashville just does everything that Dallas does a little bit better. And the fact that Dallas was able to steal game one, that Ben Bishop came out and played really well, it's going to be a low-scoring, tight-checking series. And we saw that in games like that, Dallas is a very live dog in those situations. So that was definitely an interesting one. But the one that stands out to me, I mean, what Toronto did on the road at Boston in game one, I mean, they just looked like the better team. They looked like the more confident team, the more comfortable team. Frederik Andersen played really, really well, and that's important for Toronto because they're not a great team in their own zone. But if Anderson's going to go out there and stop 37 of 38 every game in this series, Toronto's going to get their chances and going to cash in on their opportunities. So that was a big confidence-building win for the Maple Leafs in game one. And obviously now, you know, they're going home with no worse than a split. So they have to be very happy with how game one played out.
How about San Jose? Had a bit of a rough stretch as they got ready for the postseason, but took care of business in that opening game against Vegas.
Yeah, the thing about San Jose is, I mean, they're such a strong team up front, you know, both defensively and with the forwards. Their problem all season long has been stopping the puck. Martin Jones and Aaron Dell have not played particularly well this season. When San Jose gets it going with some positive momentum up the ice, they're a very tough team to stop. And sometimes that starts with a big save from your goaltender. And Martin Jones didn't have to make too many big saves here in this game. But you know, getting up to that 3-0 lead, taking care of business in the third period, keeping Vegas away from the net, giving Jones a clean look at a lot of those shots. I mean, that's quintessential San Jose hockey. And as long as Jones makes the saves that he should, then this series probably plays out the way we saw game one play out.
We'll turn our attention now to some baseball, my friend, as we take a look at this Friday slate. And, well, there's some interesting games here from a handicapping perspective. And I look at Boston and Baltimore right now. And the reason I bring that game up is because Boston's been a bit of a train wreck this year. And you look at the way Baltimore has played, I think, you know, Chris Davis has really kind of become the voodoo doll or the punching bag, however you want to put it, throughout the course of the year. But, you know, this is a game with a pretty interesting line right now, especially when you consider how poorly Boston has played throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, this is a pretty big line here tonight. Eduardo Rodriguez, a minus 240 favorite, which again means you bet 240 to win 100, and he's been downright awful so far this year. And the real concerning thing for me, and I did back Eduardo Rodriguez in his second start, and it was a losing pick for me, is that after the first game, Rodriguez and the pitching coach kind of had some words, and the pitching coach kind of threw him and the catcher under the bus and in the media after the game, and then nothing got better for game two. And that's pretty worrisome, because Rodriguez is a guy that I did really like coming into the season, but you know, apparently he's not executing, or he's not communicating well with his catcher, or they're not on the same page with their game plan. Seems like there's a lot of that going on here in Boston, which is really strange. And I think Alex Cora is an excellent manager, and obviously they're coming off of the World Series win. They will eventually rise to the level that they should. I mean, the offense is coming around now at home. The pitching staff will eventually come around. It's one of those things where early on in the year, a lot of people like to play big underdogs, because while true talent wins out over 162 games, early on in the year, a lot of people are on equal footing. You know, a lot of pitchers are still trying to get into the season. Same thing with a lot of hitters. Usually big underdogs are very profitable in April. That's been the case here so far, especially with Boston and New York really struggling.
Do you think, because of that same line of thinking, you may have some people jumping on the Houston bandwagon tonight in their matchup against Seattle, even though Seattle at 13-2 is out to a terrific start?
There's not much I can say about this one, because I am on Houston tonight. I do like them quite a bit. I love what they're doing with Wade Miley. They've basically turned Wade Miley into Dallas Keuchel Part 2, and I think that plays really, really well for Houston, especially with how good their infield defense is. The thing about tonight is that Wade Miley is an extreme ground ball guy. Seattle's second in the league in fly ball percentage. They're winning because they're hitting a lot of home runs right now, and really a lot of people league-wide are hitting a lot of home runs with what seems to be a juiced ball once again. But just a bad matchup tonight for Seattle, I think, where, you know, Wade LeBlanc doesn't have much margin for error. Wade Miley does. And the thing about it is that, you know, in the next two games, Seattle gets Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole. So we'll see if this is what it takes to slow down that Mariners offense, facing an extreme ground ball guy tonight that doesn't really fit with what they want to do, and then two elite-level guys in Verlander and Cole.
I'm glad you mentioned the juice ball. Our morning show guys were talking a little bit about that as well, the way everyone's kind of taking it out. Does that change the way you might approach a game or a series, depending on how you're looking at it from the Vegas standpoint? I would think it'd be more pitcher than anything in the past, and now maybe hitters play a bigger part in that?
It's definitely playing a role, and I think it's kind of contributed to the pretty bad start I've had for baseball season here, because a lot of times you think about April, and you think about, you know, everyone's trying to get their timing down, both hitters and pitchers. The weather's cold. The ball doesn't carry. Well, this year, a lot of high total games are going over the total. I think totals of 9 or higher are hitting at about, 80, 85% here so far in the month of April, which is something that, you know, we usually don't see. I mean, average exit velocity is up. Average batted ball distance is up. Guys are hitting at a higher launch angle. So they're playing into this corked or juiced baseball. A lot of high velocity contact. Over 17% of batted balls with an exit velocity of 100-plus miles per hour. So I think it has really impacted the totals market more so than anything from a baseball standpoint. But also, you know, when there are more home runs, even the bad teams have guys that can hit mistakes. You know, the good teams are good because they walk a lot or they put a lot of balls in play. They don't strike out a whole lot. We're seeing a lot of high strikeout teams hitting a lot of home runs here early on in the year. That's made underdogs even more dangerous, and also, you know, makes it very dangerous to bet unders, which is something I traditionally like to do in the month of April.
Adam, we'll close out on this. But tomorrow's going to be an interesting day for the Indians, and I'm just curious from a handicapping perspective how you handle a situation like the one the Indians will be in tomorrow where they call up a guy like Jeffrey Rodriguez for a spot start. It is just kind of generally assumed that he's going to make that start tomorrow, then go right back down to AAA Columbus. But how do you approach that from a handicapping perspective, seeing a guy pitch in the big leagues for the first time against a team like Kansas City that has really struggled throughout the course of the season?
Well, when you look at Jeffrey Rodriguez, he made a handful of starts last year with Washington, and you know he's one of those guys that actually kind of fits the opener concept that Tampa Bay is doing. He was very good the first time through the order. He throws extremely hard. The problem is he doesn't have a very deep arsenal. His fastball is okay. His secondary stuff isn't very good. So the first time through the order as a starter, guys only hit 191 off of him with a 311 slugging percentage. The second time through, they hit 288 with a 627 slugging percentage. So he's one of those guys where I think for the first couple of innings, he'll probably be okay. After that, you know, then it's kind of anybody's guess what he might do. He really does fit that opener concept. And quite frankly, I was hoping that the Indians would go out and get like a journeyman, also ran starting pitcher, like an Edwin Jackson or something like that. Call up Jeffrey Rodriguez, use him as an opener, like Tampa Bay does with Ryan Stanek, and then go to somebody like Edwin Jackson or you know, one of the other guys that's out there that just kind of can give you three or four innings before he kind of falls off. That was my hope with Clevinger being out, but I don't know, maybe that was a little bit too advanced for what the front office is doing right now.
Yeah, well, going to be interesting to see how Rodriguez fares tomorrow. Again, it's assumed he's just going to make that start and then go right back down to Columbus. Adam, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a good weekend. We'll have you on again next week.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Adam, again. Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to get to a break. Coming up in just a moment, Your Money Now and Matt Douglas with the local news. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.